Here we go with another On Deck podcast. The following was recorded on October 5th, 2008. It's the conversation between Terry Kaminsky and I as we discuss where to get started when going one-to-one within your school. This podcast and all podcasts at On Deck are recorded under a Creative Commons 3.0 Share Alike license. What are we talking about?
I've just taken on a position at my school of coordinating a one-to-one laptop implementation. And our school is a 9-to-12 school in Cold Lake, Alberta, Canada. And I know some things about implementing laptops, but I've never worked in a one-to-one environment. I guess I call myself a techno-knowledgeable person, but I'm sure there's lots of things that I haven't considered and thought about when we go to implementing laptops. So I've got, I guess, a bajillion questions, and I guess I want to pick your brain too and see, because you've been working in those kind of environments up to this point. So I kind of want to not reinvent the wheel, but learn from those who have been doing it.
All right. Well, I don't know how well I will answer your questions, but I'll try. I've actually never taught in a one-to-one environment either. So we'll see what we can do here, how that'll work.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, some information better than nothing. I mean, we've already started planning implementation with our teachers. We're going to be buying MacBooks for all our teachers and servicing them on just use a MacBook, period, before we actually get into the educational part of it. Yeah. And so we're going to start with basically out-of-the-box stuff. Here it is, turn it on. This is where the hard drive is. This is how you log on, get on board, all that sort of stuff. So they can play for a while. They can get familiar with the platform.
Yeah, that's really important. I mean, that one thing about, you know, here at ISB, they are Mac in the elementary where I work. And what they have done is just, for example, this year we had about 12 new teachers come in, and a lot of them had never used a Mac before. And they didn't go through that process. And I think it has not helped us in any way move forward, because we had a bunch of teachers come in who are used to using a PC and not knowing, you know, even how to shut a window, or that, you know, how do you right click on a Mac? I mean, just simple, basic, out of the box type things. So spending some time on that, I think, is really important, especially when you're changing, you know, whenever you're changing an operating system. I think the good thing you have going for you is that no matter what you would have chosen, it would have been learning a new platform. I mean, either the school would have had to move to Vista, or the school is going to have to switch to Apple. So either way you do it, you're going to have to go through that training. I think a lot of schools right now should be going through that training, actually, because you have to change. I mean, you can't sit on XP forever, even if you're staying Windows.
So. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and so so what we're going to do after we let the teachers play for a couple of weeks or so, we're going to be doing these things. We're calling them bagels and books, where about every Friday or every second Friday, we're going to have a scheduled session. It's going to be a topic. It might be iPhoto. It might be iMovie. It might be what we call come and play. Right. Just come and sit down and ask us anything you want. Bring your laptop. And this is just kind of free for all, so that people feel like they've got some ongoing support and assistance to go along with the whole implementation.
Yeah, and you know, we run here at ISB, we run 3 days a week after school. We have one that is called a personal tech support Mondays, and those are by far our greatest sessions, where people can just come with any question, and all of the educational technology people we all sit in the library, the learning hub. And we all sit there and we answer any questions, and we grab people as they come in. And of course, we all have our specialties. So we kind of grab people with what we know, with what they're trying to learn. And so we do that a lot of that same thing. And I think that's, you know, if you can set something up like that, that's just a volunteer basis drop-in type of scenario where people can come and get their questions answered after school, before school, lunchtime, I don't know. However,
yeah,
you can set it up.
That's what we're going to do. And then hopefully for next year, we're going to also try to have a kid tech team. Or since we're at high school, 9 to 12, we're going to try and have 3 or 4 or 5 kids that are going to be able to help kids with problems. So, you know, they're sitting in the cafeteria, they're in a class, whatever, and something goes wrong. Well, lots of times the kids know as much as a teacher when it comes to the computer. So why can't a kid help troubleshoot what's going on?
And are you going to do that? Are you going to run a class, or is that going to be after school?
Kind of what we're envisioning is kind of volunteer like it is. And they will be going to regular classes during the day. When the tech team meet, we haven't kind of fleshed that out, whether it will be a set class, whether it will be after school, whatever. We're even thinking of having a room in the morning where, let's say, from 8 in the morning to 8:45, any kid who has a laptop issue can drop into this room, and whether it's a teacher who's there, a kid tech that's there, they can help get things addressed. And hopefully most of the tech things are fairly simple once we get the kid off and ready to go for the day. I guess worst case scenario is we've got to take a spare laptop, we've got to switch it out with the kid laptop and go, hey, okay, here's the spare, use this today. We're going to be working on your laptop to either re-image it or get it working or whatever. Kind of give the kids the feeling that if they're in trouble, they've got support too.
Yeah. What do you have as far as IT support going one-to-one? Have you hired more people?
No, that's going to be a bit of a struggle, I think. Our school district is fairly large geographically, and we have currently 3 IT people for about, I'm guessing off the top of my head, 24 to 30 schools. And one of the things we think we're going to need at our school is some dedicated tech support to make this work, because our one thing is, if the network doesn't work, if the hardware doesn't work, it don't matter what the teachers are doing, things gonna fail.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't. Oh, that's. So you have 3 people to cover 24 to 30 schools. So you don't even have a dedicated person that will be at that school all time.
No, we're talking about trying to get at least a half-time person assigned to our school next year. That's what we're talking about, trying to, whether you call them, negotiate it, work out, whatever, that, you know, one of those tech people is going to be there, let's say, every day from 8 a.m. till noon, so that if there's any issues during the startup of the day, we can get them dealt with and things like that. But that's something we're going to have to work towards, because, of course, dollars and money are always an issue when it comes to these things. And so currently, like, my position is going to be, well, the current vision is my position is going to be more working with teachers, helping them implement technology in their classroom. But we're definitely going to need a dedicated techie person who can do the hardware stuff, the work stuff. I think in my half time that I'll be teaching half time, doing the coordination half time, but I can't fix everything in that time either.
Yeah. So what? How big is your school? How many kids are we talking?
Our school's about 700 kids in grade 9 to 12. So next year when we implement with grade 9, as we're estimating, we're going to have about 170 laptops with kids. It's about 30 to 40 laptops with teachers. So we're looking at least 200 machines going into next year and then growing every year after that.
Wow.
Because really, we'll move from grade
really,
9 in the...
Yeah. You need to get some dedicated IT support sitting at that school. Because the problem that happens is you have somebody half-time till noon. That's fantastic. But if a server goes down at 12:30 and there's nobody there to know how to troubleshoot it, and you have a teacher who's getting ready to do a lesson and the kids can't get on the wireless, you know, that's going to...
That's huge.
That's huge. You're going to lose teacher buy-in very quickly. That's a tough thing. And I can see your position, because you will be there full time. I can already envision you spending way more of your time doing IT stuff And I think you're going to have a big learning curve about servers and switches and all of coming your way for sure.
Yeah, and that's – I'm hoping that I'm not going to become the techie versus the teacher guide, so to speak. I mean, I know I'm going to have to do some of that, but I think a big part of the implementation also is holding the hands of teachers to them, other than using a computer to do their own day-to-day job, making tests, email, all that. None of them have taught in a one-to-one environment before, so helping them implement that is going to be huge. I'm going to need to be able to go into classrooms, meet with teachers, you know, do all of that stuff. And you're right, network's not working, et cetera. Well, I can't do that. I got to be troubleshooting all that other stuff. Yeah. So it's, yeah, that's definitely a, I guess, for better use of a word, that's a fight we're going to have to fight this year as dedicated IT support.
Yeah. So what are you doing as far as professional development? I mean, have you already started this, or is this being implemented next year?
What we're going to do is, we haven't ordered our teacher laptops. We're actually waiting. The big rumor is there's new MacBooks coming out in a week or two. So we're waiting for the new computers. The timeline is hopefully by the middle of October, get the computers ordered, get them here, get them imaged, all of that sort of stuff. We're hoping by the middle to late November to get the laptops in teachers' hands. And that way they'll, you know, we'll do the out-of-the-box stuff, and then over Christmas break, they'll be able to play and whatever. If we get back January from Christmas break, we're going to do a couple of sessions probably on, like, iMovie, something like that. We haven't decided which one we're going to start with. The next thing we're trying to line up with Apple is one of the Apple services they offer is collaboration and using Web 2.0 tools, and it's a two-day workshop, because one of our goals is, even though we're not going to be into one this year, we want every teacher to either have a blog, a wiki, or a web page, one of them for one class for second semester, which starts in February and goes to June. Because one of the other things we've been learning from our research and reading and stuff is that one-to-one is all about collaboration, and you need a web presence if you want collaboration to happen. So the insert setup that Apple's going to be do wikis, blogs, RSS feeds, Google Apps, all of that sort of stuff over 2 days. And then he would be hand-holding those teachers to help them implement that over the course of second semester. Because we figure if we get them to implement either a blog or a wiki or a web page in one course, we're going to be dabbling in it. And that way, when we actually go to one-to-one in September 2009, they're going to know what web presence is about. They're going to have play with it. They're going to have a little an idea of what I want to do. Because most of them will probably only have one class that's one-to-one next year, because we're only going with the grade nines. And most of our teachers teach courses from grade 9 up to grade 12. So if we force them to kind of dabble with a web page, wiki, whatever, in one class in second semester, they're almost ready to go in terms of the web presence thing. And then we got some whole issues we need to talk about. We're thinking of using Google Apps to give every kid an email address, use the chat features, the collaborative features in Google Docs and things like that. That's one way we're thinking of going. The other thing we're going to do in second semester next year is a lot of what I talked about earlier, the bagels and MacBooks on Friday mornings for an hour. You know, we're going to do some PD, but we're going to repeat PD sessions, and they're going to be voluntary. But we're also going to have free lists. We're going to have a must list. You must be able to do these things using your computer with kids and with your job. And so anything that's on the must list will be addressed in the bagels and MacBooks PD. Then there's going to be goods and shoulds. And those are things, if you want to go beyond what we're offering right now, here's some ideas of things you get into. We'll help you with that. But definitely every teacher on staff has to be able to do everything on the must list. And I mean, they're simple things. They got to be able to use email. They got to be able to use a blog or a wiki. I mean, they got to be able to use the grading
program. What if they can't?
What if they can't? Then we're going to kind of, I guess, this is covert or overt. We're going to keep attendance a little bit, and we're going to monitor. If there are some people who are not taking advantage of the voluntary PD, and we don't think they can do what's on the must list, then either myself or one of the administrators or whatever might approach them in a non-confrontational way and say, hey, you know, like, we need to help you out. We need you to get involved. How can we help you out? Like, we noticed you haven't been attending the voluntary sessions. Is that not working for you? Would you prefer a one-on-one? We're going to kind of figure out what's going to work for them. But in the end, everybody has to get there. I guess the hammer is going to get progressively harder and harder as the year goes on. There's going to become a point where it's not going to be voluntary for some people.
And are the administrators on board with that? Are the administrators on board with
that? Yep. Oh, absolutely. They know that if we're going to make this work, there is a minimum set of skills and tools teachers need to be able to use. And if they're not going to get on board with that, then we're going to have to push them. We're going to make it voluntary at first and have multiple opportunities for them to drop in. And knowing our staff, a large majority of them will take advantage of the voluntary. It won't be an issue.
We know
there might be a few.
Yeah. Are you going to have your own server at school then?
Yeah, we're going to have, that's part of what we're, like right now we have our own, we have a Novell server at school, but we're talking about for next year, how many servers do we need and what structure does the network need to be? And we visited a couple of schools who have been doing one-to-one implementation, and we're thinking we're going to need at least two servers next year. And we're thinking of starting off with one server being for the teachers and one being for the kids. And then as time goes on from year to year, as we add more and more MacBooks to the project, we will add servers. The one school we visited, we visited a school in Boston and a couple schools in Maine 2 weeks ago. And the one school we visited has a similar number of students to what we have. And they actually have 4 X servers at their school.
Are they web servers or are they internal?
They're internal.
Okay, so
they're in-house.
What I see, this is, I think what schools need to start to do is you need that server, but I think those servers should be web servers so that you can start accessing this stuff via the web. It's not going to do you any good if you have internal servers for kids to store files where every kid has a laptop and they go home that night and they can't access their folders. They can't access the files that they've saved on
the one thing we're thinking about, because we've seen it at some schools also, is the ability for the kids to take their files from their laptop to the server at school. So basically when they leave, everything they need is on their laptop, and they sync. There's two ways to do it. There's automatic setting when you log in, or there's manual, one or the other. But I think we try to set up automatic syncing. When you log in and you log out, it syncs with the server. So the server kind of almost acts like backup almost. So the kids will always have all their files on their laptop. And then if they do something at night at home, create some new files, whatever, when they log into the network at school, it will sync and then update the server with any new files that they've got on their machine. So that's kind of what we were looking at initially.
Oh, how are teachers going to do a handout, a digital handout to students? That has to be done in the class period?
That's why we're thinking of the wiki and the blog thing. And we're thinking that my preference is wikis. I've been using wikis with my kids for a while, and my preference would be a wiki. We're going to use third-party providers after there's a wiki, whether it's Wiki Spaces or PB Wiki or whatever, when the kids go home and they get on the net, oh, yeah, I need that assignment. Well, I just go to the class wiki and I get it off the wiki and I look at it and do it and whatever. The other thing we got to really talk about and think about is we've seen a lot at one-to-one schools where they have things called drop boxes where kids electronically submit their work to their teacher. And I mean, there's all kinds of different ways to do something that. I mean, you could have classes set up on Moodle and you can use Moodle, or I mean, some in the state of Maine, all the projects in the state of Maine are using for class. And there are some other third-party options out there. We definitely want to set up electronic drop boxes for the kids so that they're submitting electronically, getting everything, getting from as much as possible, getting everything from the teacher electronically as well.
Yeah, well, I think what you really need to look at, and this is something that is you need to have a web presence somewhere on the web. And if you continually rely on third-party software, you're going to run into limits. Let's, for example, let's say that the school decides to go with WikiSpaces. At some point, WikiSpaces does cut you off. You know, if it's 25 right. uploads, where do people stick, you know, movies? Are you always going out to YouTube? Do you want every movie to be on YouTube that kids create? And so I think schools, and, you know, this is something that I would be talking about, is creating your own portal on one of your school servers that is accessible from outside of school and internally. It helps on, I mean, you control the file upload. I mean, if you have 3 terabytes of space, you have 3 terabytes of space. If you need more space, you just go and add hard drive space. It makes it easy for that. It makes it easy in that when kids are at school, it is fast. And you're not sitting there when you have 500 kids now trying to access WikiSpaces and WikiSpaces decides to do an update that you've lost class time. You can determine when that stuff happens. It also is nice that if the server is sitting there at school or somewhere in the district, that the kid is not having to go and, you know, access. Like WikiSpaces is actually, I believe, comes out of Australia. And so every single time if something happens, you've lost all of that data or that connection gets cut or something like that happens. The more stuff you can host and the more learning portal, web learning portal that you can create for yourself, for your kids, I think it's going to be good. What we are doing here is we've started with Moodle, and we call it PantherNet. And so every kid logs into Moodle based on, and then so that's where teachers, that's basically like what you're talking about, drop boxes and stuff. But it's accessible at school, it's accessible at home, it's quick. I mean, most of our kids live within a, you know, 15, 20 mile radius of the school, and that's all the farther that connection is going is back to the school. So we have that. So we start with Moodle, and that has basically your online course where people can drop, you know, they can hand in assignments. It's all password protected. Off of that, then, we're going to be installing ELG, which is the social networking piece for kids. Each kid has a blog. It comes with an RSS reader. It's a social network. Kids can create groups. There's after-school groups. They can have their whole – basically think of it as being Facebook for your students, just your students. So your kids can do that kind of thing. You can use, I mean, if you're going to have an X server, the X server comes with an amazing wiki. And that would be the wiki I would use. I would configure that wiki to be used at your school. And I would start creating that porthole yourself. And I'd start creating that now so that by the time you give kids, by the time the kids are here, you know, you might not have all of it done by August, but at least have Moodle and, you know, some of the portions up. We're also installing for teachers. We want every teacher to have a website/blog. And so we're installing WordPress MU. And that is, teachers are finding it really easy. They don't have to use it as a blog. They can turn comments off. And you turn comments off, and it basically becomes a really easy-to-use web page. You control the site. I mean, if some schools, you know, want teachers to use school colors or they want to have specific layouts. And with WordPress MU, you can control that. You can say you only have access to these 5 themes. These 5 themes are our school colors of blue and red. And all you have to do is click on the theme you want to use and you can start, you know, putting stuff up there. So that's kind of, you know, that's one thing I would start looking at. If you're one-to-one, you need to have an access point for students to go to. When students open up their laptops, when they come to school, where are they going to go? And you're not going to want them all going to, you know, basically every teacher having their own wiki. So I'm a kid, I have 7 different wikis, and I have to remember 7 different wiki addresses throughout the day. Where if it's all in one place, you know, I log into Moodle, right there are my 7 classes. I click, and that's my starting point. From there, you can be linked out to a wiki space if that's still the way you go. Or, you know, whatever it is, but you have a place to start the day and to start your learning. And I think that's really essential if you're going one-to-one.
So you're talking about using Moodle. Is there a reason you use Moodle versus some other third-party program?
I like Moodle because Moodle was made to run online courses. Also, if you're talking about high school, Moodle is also used. It's free, first of all.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't cost you anything. And if you are truly preparing students, not that it's about the program, but a lot of universities are using Moodle. So not only are you teaching students how to learn in a blended classroom where they're still in the class and they're still online, but you're also helping them to start understand how does Moodle operate. You know, if they do go to a school that's using Blackboard, they've seen that. They understand that. They understand what an online course looks like. They understand how to download files. They understand how to turn on in assignments. I like Moodle because it's solid. I've been using Moodle since 2001, and it's a solid piece of program. You can hack it up. You can do whatever you want, and it's solid.
That's a big answer because it's going to definitely get us started with, like you say, web presence. Because Moodle is one of the things we've considered using, but we've heard of all kinds of different software. Like I said, in the state of Maine, they use First Class, and in Boston, they use something else. So now we were at, okay, which one should we use? But hearing what you've just told me, and knowing we've already got a Moodle server set up in our district here, so it's an easy start for us. I mean, one of the IT guys knows Moodle and stuff, so it's gonna be an easy thing for us to do that.
Yeah, and even, I mean, if you're going to go with Google Apps, which I would highly recommend, you know, you can totally take Google Apps. I mean, between Google Apps and Moodle, I mean, the only thing you're really missing, you know, if you could run the wiki off of an X server and you could install WordPress MU, or the only thing then that is outside of the school's control would be blogs. You know, and whether your teacher's using Edublogs or Blogger or whatever they decide to use, you know, I mean, you can start there. But I mean, that I think really, and if your school, if you already have a Moodle server set up, I would start there. I seriously would start right there. If you've got an IT person that understands it, that knows how it works, that can do everything you need to do, I would definitely start with that. That just makes sense to me.
Okay, well then that might be the direction we head. With everybody getting an online presence next semester, is saying we want you to operate one of your classes next semester off of Moodle. Even though kids don't have laptops, they can still go home, they can still look at assignments, you can still post video, audio, whatever you want. So it's going to start getting teachers familiar with Moodle and giving them a skill set that will be very useful in our years to come.
Yeah. No, I think that definitely would be something I'd definitely be looking at for sure as a starting point.
Okay. Oh, that's good. That's definitely a very helpful comment for sure, because I mean, we've got time. We haven't even got the laptops in teachers' hands, but we have time to set up Moodle, to kind of massage it, to get some people to look at it, and so that when we say, okay, here's a Moodle in service, this is what we want to do, you know, let's make it happen. And we've got something set up for them to use and work with initially.
Yeah. And you know, Moodle has embedded blogs and wikis in it as well. Now, I don't like them. I like other services. I don't think the blog and wiki service in Moodle to me doesn't cut it. That's why we've always gone with WordPress MU, or like we're seriously now here in Bangkok, we're looking at using Elg for our blogs for students. But you know, it is there. I mean, if you need to get started somewhere, it's there for you. You know, also, I'm not sure when we did Google Sites in Shanghai, I know part of the thing that came with Google Apps was you got Google Sites. And that was an easy way to start teachers just making basic web pages. I'm not sure if they still have that service, though, because I heard that they'd done away with it. But
I'll have to check it out. But what else was I going to ask you about?
The nice thing is too, you can sync those names from an LDAP server, so you can actually pull the same username password out of Google and the same username password out of Moodle. So when a kid signs on, they sign on once for the day with the same username password, and it's kept on an LDAP server.
That's good. They don't want to have to remember 10 usernames and 10 passwords and all of that sort of stuff.
And that's something to really start thinking about. I mean, if you're just going to let, you know, teachers, you're saying that you want every teacher to have a wiki. Well, what's that kid? You know, that kid's got 8 different wikis they have to go to, And that's eight different usernames, eight different passwords that they have to remember. And that becomes really confusing really quick. And as much as you think ninth graders would be good at having one username and password for the web, for some reason, that's a difficult thing for them. That's from experience.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, so definitely Moodle is somewhere we're going to head fast kind of thing. Like I said, since we've got a server set up, we can start moving in that direction pretty quick and getting people using it. And it's going to need some tweaking. I mean, I'm sure that people are going to say, hey, I'd like it to do this, or I want this changed or whatever. But that's what this year is about. Let's do the tweaking this year.
Yeah. And the more I think, I mean, if you can keep that, you know, like you said, the one thing about one-to-one is that it really allows for collaboration. And in order to have that collaboration take place, you have to allow the kids to access things via the web. The internet becomes your portal. So you're saying that you guys think you need two servers. You know, having one server that's backing up kids' data for them automatically, a good thing. But I would not be looking at, personally, right now, I would not be looking at setting up Dropboxes with teachers on that are internal servers that kids don't have access to outside of the day. You know, where the teacher goes in and they're like, okay, everybody log on to the server and grab the file that I put in the Dropbox. No, put it on Moodle. No. Everybody accesses Moodle. You can access it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's just what you would do. So I would really start looking at as much of that stuff that you can make external via the web. I mean, the web is your best cross-platform.
Absolutely.
So anything and everything you can use it for, it's going to be, you know, find the programs, and there's so much open source stuff out there now. You can find something that'll work for you.
Yep. And the fact that Moodle's free doesn't hurt either. I mean, it's $1 and that's things important.
Yeah. No, it's that's the thing that's just incredible, is it's a really powerful program and it costs you nothing.
I'm just going to refer to my email I sent you previously, because I know I put some things in that email and questions and et cetera. Well, I know what I've got a question about. Your wireless network at your school.
Mm-hmm.
How many access points do you have at your school?
We actually had Cisco. We actually have an agreement with Cisco, and they come in once a year, and they actually are the ones that come around and monitor all of our access points. And they tell us where we need more. And we've got a whole Cisco system that sets up where basically we have a box that sits in the server room that runs all of the access points. And they're all powered via Cat5. So the power is over the Cat5's signal as well. So they're not on independent power sources. So it's power over Ethernet cable. And it's all ran from one central location. And you need enough access points that everybody can access. You can go buy, actually, I think you can actually buy, they're a little bit expensive, but they're like wireless monitors that you can actually walk around a school and find dead spots and try to figure out. I mean, that's going to depend, but it's going to be, again, it's going to be something you're going to want to make sure you spend the money on. Because as soon as you have 20 laptops connect, those things, they go down fast.
And the schools visited already, they have anywhere from 30 to 40 access points. And so that's something that the other thing I haven't told you about in this whole piece of the puzzle is we are currently building a new building for our high school. We're going to be moving into a new building next September and implementing laptops one-to-one. So the fact that we're building a new building, we want to make sure that when they're wiring the building, they're wiring in enough access points and probably even wiring in more than we actually think we need, so that it's going to be easy to just add them in.
Yeah, well, and what we are doing here, and I'll tell you what international schools are doing right now, when we're building new buildings, we're running fiber optic clear to the classroom.
Okay.
So we've got fiber optic. Basically, we have fiber optic that comes to what they usually call the black box that sits up in the ceiling between four. So we run fiber optic, and then out of that, there's basically a switch that sits right in the ceiling between four classrooms. And then all of the drops for those four classrooms run out of there. So you're literally, you know, you're only on Cat5 or Cat6 cable for not less than 100 feet, and then you're complete fiber optic the rest of the system.
Yeah, I know we're going to have fiber optic right to the building. Probably not to the classrooms, but I'm hoping that's another question. If they're not running fiber, hopefully they're running gigabit Ethernet at a minimum to all the classrooms if they're not doing fiber.
Yeah, and I mean, you're going to have to think ahead on that. Yeah, I would be getting whatever you can afford, the biggest, the best, because that, I mean,
yeah.
Bandwidth is something that you'll always run out of.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what we can do 5 years from now, who knows?
Yeah,
so exactly. You can prepare for that.
But I would definitely, if you're building a new high school, I would definitely look into a centralized system that runs your access points and don't have separate access points throughout the school. Whether I know 3M has one or Cisco has one, I think Bangkok runs. I haven't actually been in the server room, but I think they run a Cisco one here. That's really good. I mean, if it just automatically monitors, if all of a sudden there's a bunch of people in a room, it sends more IP addresses to those access points and shuts off access points in other parts of the building, or cuts back the number of IP addresses other access points are allowed to give. So it totally monitors.
So it's an intelligent device.
Yeah, very much so.
I think they're looking at Cisco devices, but that's a question I have to ask. I mean, the fact that if the network doesn't work, this whole one-to-one thing is going to die in a big hurry, because if kids can't log on, teachers and teachers experience frustration, and they're going to kind of say, close it up and put it away because it's not working.
Yeah. So do you have an IT person that's helping to build the building? Have they hired somebody?
Well, what they've done, I know that they consulted with some outside people, but I want to have a meeting with our IT people. The other thing is via Apple computers, we have access to a IT person from Apple who can come in and can look at what we've designed and can tell us, yes, that's going to work, or no, that's going to work. And I kind of want a third party impartial person as part of the discussion, because it doesn't become an us against them. The teachers telling the IT guys, no, we need this. And the IT guys telling us, no, you're crazy, you don't know what you're talking about. We have a third party in there who's going to be able to say, yes, the teachers are right, or no, the IT guys are right. I just need somebody. Basically, the comment we always use is, we need one throat to choke. We need one person that we can go back to and say, you said this was going to work, and it's not working. So what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, and I would definitely hire, I mean, if I was building a new building today, I would definitely hire a specific IT consultant to handle all of that IT stuff. The problem is, the thing I'm finding is schools are continuing down the same path where they hire an architecture who doesn't, you know, an architect who doesn't understand the needs of a school, because we're not a business. We do more than email. We do more than the occasional surfing of the web. You know, we're using VoiceThread. We're a lot of heavy PHP scripting, a lot of heavy Ajax and JavaScript stuff during the day, and you better be able to support 500 or 600 laptops. You know, we're downloading Ustream videos. We're, you know, I mean, all of that stuff. And most architects don't understand the specific needs to schools that you're going to have, you know, 600, 700, 800 kids all on at the same time, and it better be able to handle it. I'd go out and find somebody in the IT field and say, this is what we need to be able to happen. We need to be able to have 700 laptops all recording a VoiceThread at the same time. You know, that's a constant bandwidth issue that I've had at every school I've been with. VoiceThread's a fantastic, you know, a fantastic program, but man, it takes, because it opens up that audio and you're recording audio directly to the internet, and it's a bandwidth hog, because you've got to have that connection's got to be open the whole time, and it can't close. And that becomes an issue. So I would definitely be hiring an IT consultant who was an IT guy who had, you know, like you said, very impartial with the whole school. Go find somebody that can come in and say, this is exactly what you need. This is how many access points you're going to need. This is how many blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And I think we're going to kind of have that person via Apple computers. They actually have someone working for them that understands education, but also is a techie. And so I think that's the person we're going to kind of lean on and say, okay, we need you to tell us what needs to happen and how it needs to happen and what we need to install and what we need to buy. Because like I said, we need that person.
Yeah.
We've had experience with our IT people. They're not educators. They're IT people. They don't understand what goes on in a school. And we've had experience more than once where You know, we've told them one thing and they've said another thing. And what happens is exactly what the teacher said was going to happen did happen.
Yep.
And now the IT guy is losing faith and we're losing confidence in them kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's so important. That's so important when you're rolling out, trying to keep that confidence up.
I have some questions about, in my email, I put things like, are there conferences I should be going to as a teacher integrator? I'm going to be helping teachers. Are there books I should be reading, et cetera? I'm picking your brain now, I guess is what I'm doing.
Mm.
Like, I mean, I know like NECC is a big one. Go to NECC, but there's lots of other ones out there. There was one, and I don't know, you might have been involved with it last year. There was an online one last year that was about Web 2.0 tools in the classroom. And there were all kinds of people from all over, like the United States and Canada, that did online presentations. And I kind of just, I was a participant via observer in the conference, and I read lots of the online stuff, and people did some video stuff, some slide share stuff, etc. I did that last year, but
yeah, so that's getting ready to happen again. Actually, I think that starts the 20th of October here. That's the K-12 online conference.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one. So that's happening again this year. That's a fantastic place. As an integrator, that's a great place to go to find videos to show your teachers. You know, that makes for a really, it's one of those things where you could run a professional development where if you downloaded all of the videos or downloaded 10 of the videos, people could come into a session and you can say, I've got 10 of them. You know, I've got 10 videos here. I've got this one's on blogging. This one's on using Flickr. This one's on using social bookmarks. This one's on using Moodle. This one's on using whatever, you know, come grab a movie from me and click play and go learn. You know, and it's
right.
They really are a good resource because, like you said, I mean, there's just all these tech people from around the world are creating these things for free and putting them up there. And there's things that are very practical. There are things that are very technicky. There are things that are very philosophical. There are just down and dirty. This is how things get done. So it's a good gamut of things that are going on. Other conferences that you need to go to as an integrator, I would say. If you can get yourself to Philadelphia with the one Chris Lehman puts on, I think that's a good conference. I think it's called EduCon.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. What do you have any conferences in Canada?
Not really. See, like one-to-one's not nearly big in Canada as it is in the United States. Partly due to funding. Like, we haven't got nearly the grant structure that they have in the United States. Basically, if you want to go one-to-one, you need to make that decision as a school and decide, okay, we're going to take our money and we're going to allocate it there. We get funded per student is basically how we get funded.
Yeah.
And that's all the money you get. You figure out how to use it kind of thing. Hire staff, do whatever. Whereas, like, that's definitely one thing when we're in Maine and Boston 2 weeks ago, all these grants they can access. So they can write a bajillion grants. And if they get all this money via grants, now they've got this pool of money they can do a bunch of things with. Our biggest thing I think we're going to have to look at is maybe trying to partner with some companies or corporations or things like that, that, you know, there's going to be some PR benefits out of it for them, but we're going to get some money benefits out of it, so to speak, to do some things that we want to do. Because there's definitely a change that we're going to have to look at in terms of sustainability long-term. And how do we fund? If we want a full-time IT person, how do we fund that? If we want a full-time teacher integrator, how do we fund that? You know, we currently envision about every 4 years, we're going to have to buy or roll over sets of laptops. So next year, the ones that the grade 9 start with, by the time they get to grade 12, they'll have used them for 4 years. And we probably have to look at a whole new set of laptops for the incoming grade 9s that following year.
Agreed.
So it's that continual rollover of technology. And whether we're going to do a lease for 4 years, and at the end of the 4 years, we tell the kids, you know, for $40, $50, you can buy your laptop and take it with you. They might not want it. It's 4 years old. They might want the newest, latest, greatest thing. I'm not sure how we're going to make that work either.
Yeah. You got a lot of figuring out to do in a year's time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely.
Yeah. So as far as other conferences, I would just be looking for conferences that are dealing more with one-to-one. There are a ton of educational technology conferences in the States, but I would look for ones that are truly focusing on one-to-one or have a one-to-one strand so that you can really tap into that knowledge base. I don't know any off the top of my head that have a specific one-to-one strand in them.
Well, I know last year that at NECC, they had a specific strand for one-to-one laptop implementation. So that's definitely one that I know has that strand of one-to-one that you can look at. But I think what we may be looking at more of is doing what I'm doing right now, talking to people who are doing it and picking their brains, looking at their websites at their schools and sharing and collaborating with people who are actually doing it right now.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think you're right. And I think you could really look at, you could probably save, you know, a lot of money by doing things like this. You know, I mean, how much money would it cost? How much money is it going to cost to get you to NECC? And could you use that to Skype in a presenter to present on wikis or present on changing your classroom practice? You know, that's one thing actually I wrote down here that, you know, you were talking about all of the PD stuff you have up. I would really focus on some that deal specifically with classroom management with a laptop. Teachers struggle with how classroom management changes when you have a laptop. They don't want kids on them all the time. They don't understand that, you know, when you are talking, it's okay to have the kids shut the lid. It's okay to have them put it under their desk from time to time. And so many times, you know, we roll in one-to-one and teachers get scared that if they're not using the laptop all the time, they're going to look like a bad teacher and this, that, and the other thing. And how do you manage that? And so I would just make sure I'd work in some professional development around classroom management of a one-to-one program. I think that's really important, especially if you're talking to teachers that have never done it before. A whole school.
The other thing we're going to implement, and it's a specific, I mean, it's an Apple product, is Apple Remote Desktop. We're definitely going to be implementing Apple Remote Desktop, and we're going to in-service our teachers on Apple Remote Desktop and how they can use it in their classroom. I mean, you might want kids to all look at a certain diagram. Well, use Apple Remote Desktop and zap it right to all their laptop screens. Here you are. You got a picture of the heart or whatever you're looking at in biology class. There it is. Everybody's focusing on it, and you're controlling their machine. All they can see and do is look at that diagram, et cetera. And then you can monitor kids' use, too, when they're actually supposed to be using their laptop, to whether it's to blog or to collaborate or whatever. And if they're not, you can see they're not doing that, and you can address it individually with kids. But we think Apple Remote Desktop is going to be a pretty powerful tool in that respect as well.
Do you have any sense of how techie your staff is? Have you done any pre-surveys or
anything? We haven't done any surveys, but the one-to-one project, we were actually chosen, school was chosen by our school district because of all the high schools in our district, ours is probably the most ready to do something like this. There are a number of people on staff who are quite technological literate. There are some that are not very technological literate, and we'll have to help them more than others. But I think in general, like if I break my school down into departments, the math teachers, the science, the social, etc. In every single one of our departments, there's at least one or two people who is fairly technological literate and willing to do things like this. So I think we're going to have almost like a support mechanism in every department where there'll be someone in their department they can go to and say, hey, I can't get this to work, or hey, I want to do this. And they'll have someone in their subject specialty that can talk the subject specifics as well as the part of it. So
That's good. What kind of model are you moving away from? I mean, have teachers always had a laptop, or are they going from desktop to laptops? Did you have carts that were shared between classrooms? Did you have a lab setting?
Yeah, what our current model is 2 years ago, every teacher had a desktop. Last year, we bought Dell laptops for all of our teachers. So all of them have laptops, and some of them have been using them wonderfully, you know, taking them home, using them in their classroom. Others of them have used them like a modified desktop, just leave it at school. I use it like a regular computer. The other access we have to technology in the school is we actually have three labs that have 32 computers in each lab. One of the labs is exclusively used to teach computer studies. The other two labs can be signed out by teachers to bring class in. So, you know, the social studies teacher might use it to have the kids write an essay or something. The science teacher might use it to have bring in a whole class to go to some websites that they want the kids to use. But it was a sign-out model, and you could only get in if the lab was available. If another teacher had it signed out, you couldn't get in. So where we want to move next year in our new school, in building our new school, we are going to have at least two, if not three, sets of carts, and each cart will have about 30 laptops on it. So that means, like, there's lots of time in math class. I want my kids to do something with a spreadsheet for 20 minutes, but then I'm done with the computer. Currently, I signed out the lab for an entire period and only use the computers for 20 minutes. But what could happen with the carts is if I use the cart for 20 minutes, a half an hour, and our periods are 84 minutes long is how long our periods are here. We have four periods a day, and each period's 84 minutes long. So what could happen is the second half of a period, another teacher could have access to that cart. Maybe an English teacher wants their kids to block the last half of her class or whatever. Well, we could roll the cart up to their room. Kids could pop the laptops up and do that. So we're moving, I guess, from a lab environment. We'll start with some carts next year. All our grade nines are going to be one-to-one, so they'll all have their own computer. So we're going to have to share three carts between roughly 500 kids, 450, around that amount. Really? It's going to be tough. I mean, it's not going to be a lot different than the lab situation right now. I mean, the two labs we can sign out, basically all 700 of our kids are having to fight for those two labs. Right. Their teachers are having to fight for those two labs. So going to the CART model is a little bit better, but the CART model is going to be just kind of a bridge for the next 4 years.
Is every room going to have an LCD?
Every room is going to have a data projector for sure. Initially, we were thinking every room was also going to have a smart board, but we're starting to rethink that idea, partly because of the tour we went on to Boston and Maine 2 weeks ago. The one thing I noted on our tour is in all the schools we visited, we saw two smart boards in the entire time. Smart boards are huge in our district, but there are lots of smart boards around. But something really clicked in for me about smart boards is smart boards are about basically one computer demo for the whole class. That's what a smart board is really about. So it's about the focus of the teacher at the front of the room. Whereas when going one-to-one, we don't want the focus to be on the teacher at the front of the room. We want kids collaborating. We want them using their laptops. So we're kind of in the discussion of maybe we need to discuss as a staff or as departments, do we need a smart board or do we not? I know at our school right now, the two departments that are heavy with smart boards are the math department, which I teach in, and they're getting into it in the science department. About half the people in the science department have it. I see some benefits for me in math. One of the things I'm doing is when I'm teaching kids an algorithm of some sort, I'm writing it on the smart board, and every single day I'm saving all my notes and posting them online. So any kid who isn't there for whatever reason. They're sick, they were on a volleyball tournament, whatever. They can get the notes online. And in all of our discussions with laptop schools, they have all said, every single one of them has said to us that the classes where laptops are actually used the least is math class. Just because of the type of writing you have to do in math. When you're writing equations and solving equations, it's not as user-friendly on a laptop as writing it on a piece of paper. So the smart board still may be useful in a math class. Is it going to be useful in an English class or a history or a social studies class? I'm not convinced it is. I'm thinking those classes are much more collaboration on the laptop, the Moodle, the online web presence. I mean, if a teacher wants to show a video, okay, they can show a video. But I would see as a social studies teacher, if I have some video on World War II, I want that on my blog or my wiki or on my Moodle. So if a kid wants to watch it five more times, they can do that whenever they want.
Yeah. I would personally, if I was building a school right now, I wouldn't be putting a smart board in every room, but I'd be putting a document camera in every room. I think document cameras still help us to bridge that gap between things that are still made of matter, physical things, and be able to display them. If you're using remote desktop, you know, it's really easy that you hook up a document camera via USB cable to one computer, hit remote desktop, and the kids are looking at paramecium through a microscope gigantically on their screen. Or, you know, you're reading a book out loud to kids, which you still can do, and you have it open underneath the document camera so every kid is following along with you. In science class, I think they're priceless in science class because you can have, you know, even if it's just projected up on the whiteboard and everybody has to pay attention up on the whiteboard, you have a close-up of chemical reactions and you have a close-up of dissections and whatever else. And I have found them to be used 10 times more than any smart board in any room I've ever seen.
Hey, and that's good. That's good advice. I mean, definitely because I mean, dollars and cents is a factor in building the new school also. And when we started looking at it and went, well, this is how many gajillion dollars it's going to cost to put a smart board in every room. And hey, maybe that's not what we should be doing. Maybe we should be spending our dollars more wisely in other ways.
Yeah, and a document camera is nowhere near the cost of a smart board.
No, absolutely not. So, not at all. Well, that's good advice. I appreciate that.
Yeah. All righty.
Anyways, you have answered lots of my questions. I will probably be emailing you with more or Skyping with you or whatever and checking things out. But like I said, I'm probably going to be doing more of what you and I are doing now, picking the brains of people who are doing what we're going to be doing and saying, what should we do? What shouldn't we do? Because you guys have obviously had some pitfalls and we want to try to avoid those pitfalls. Why go through the same things that other people have when we can avoid them? And we're going to have decisions to make and, as I said, questions. So yeah, I might be firing you some questions on email or Skyping you and say, okay, you know what, Jeff, what do you think of this? This is what we're thinking of doing. And you might say, yeah, perfect. Or you might go, hold on a minute here. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? So
use your network. Those are all, that's what it's there for. You know, it's time to use the network. So
absolutely.
Yeah, feel free. But I would just say,
excellent.
You know, as you're starting out, however much PD time you think you need double. And however much time you think it's going to take to implement and how fast you think teachers are going to get on board, I have not seen a school yet that has gotten it as fast as we all hope and think that they will. And so just keep that in mind, and you know, try not to get frustrated. And that's just, I mean, it takes so, the implementation is such a long thing and the skill level of a lot of our teachers. And, you know, I've been to quite a few schools now, and the skill level for our teachers, like you talk about, well, we're going to teach every teacher remote desktop. And I'm sitting here thinking that is a month of just straight training every day after school before you're going to have every teacher understanding how the heck that program works.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I think
just,
we're going
to, it's going to be that you're going to have intense PD training as soon as possible.
We're going to have to do it incrementally. Like, we're going to have to give them sort of the, here's the basics, and you've got some time to play with it. So now let's go to the kind of some more detail and some more detail. If you try to throw it at them all at once, they're going to get so overwhelmed that they're going to run screaming the other direction kind of thing.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. So, well, good luck. You know I'm here. Call me anytime.
I appreciate it.
Email me anytime.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm going to keep watching your blog all the time. I've learned lots just by reading your blog. So,
well, thank you. No, but I look forward to just kind of following you as you get into this, because this is, you know, I think by 2000, I would say by 2012, if your school's not one-to-one, you're going to be out in the cold and you're going to be trying to figure it out late. And I have a skewed perspective of that because I'm looking at just international schools where most of them, money's not the issue. It's whether or not to do it. And, so I do have a skewed view of that, but I still think by 2012, the marbles here in the next 2 years, I think you're going to start seeing the dominoes drop. And if your school's not in a situation or not in a place where they're even thinking about it, you've got so far to go.
I agree.
So it'll be fun to watch you go through it. Know that I'm here if you need me.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. And email me anything else, and we'll talk more later. I've got to go to bed.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. See ya.
All right. See you later, Terry.